We are actually going to be beginning a short sermon series, really taking off from what we looked at last year. So about last year at this time, we looked at the prophet Elijah. And today we want to transition into Elisha. So just really quick review of Elijah. He was a great prophet back in the day when there was mostly people that worshipped idols and worshipped Baals, and there was a lot of sacrifices to the gods, and sometimes there was even child sacrifice. There were a lot of things that were going on. And so Elijah was a man who trusted in God, and he spoke for God. If you remember in James chapter 5, we are encouraged to pray, and there it says Elijah was a man just like we are, and he prayed for what? He prayed it would not rain. So for 3.5 years, there was no rain. And then he prayed it would rain, and then the rains came. So he was a man of faith, and so that was one of the miracles that happened during his time that he was a prophet. And so there's a lot of different things that he did, he said, he prophesied, and miracles in his day. So when we did that sermon series, it was just basically the five lessons, and the one had to do with the rain. The other one was with a widow's only son who had died, and he brought that young boy back to life. There was that contest that they had, if you remember, on Mount Carmel, where all the prophets, 450 prophets, got together and they prayed that fire would come down from heaven, that somehow that their gods would send this fire and consume the sacrifice. And they prayed and prayed and prayed, and just nothing ever happened. And then it was Elijah's turn to say, well, I think my God can bring down fire from heaven. I know he can. As a matter of fact, let's just douse this with water. And so several times they just poured water on it, which if you're familiar with trying to build a campfire, it's not really helpful to add a lot of water to the wood, but he did that anyway. And then he prayed, and this fire came down from heaven and consumed everything up. And so there was a great victory that day. And this is kind of an important background, because if you're familiar, what happened then is that Elijah pulled out a sword, and since they were all false prophets, this is kind of what the Old Testament said to do, so he killed, seems like by himself, 450 prophets just with a sword. So he was maybe a little bit angry with God's judgment and put to death 450 of these false prophets. Just to say, this is God. We all need to return back to God. We need to leave all this past in the past. We need to get beyond this. We need to move forward. So, there was a woman living in the land. And if you're familiar again with a little bit of the Bible, there's a woman named Jezebel. I really don't know any parents that have named their children, their little girls, Jezebel. It's just not a good name. I'm sorry if you know somebody named Jezebel. It's not a reflection of who they are, but she was just a wicked woman. And so she thought, we're going to put Elijah to death. And so this is just, he's on all the wanted posters in the post office. I mean, he had people out looking for him. This was just her one track that she wanted Elijah dead. She was so mad at him. And so now Elijah was very afraid. And so he ran away and he was crying to the Lord. He said, Lord, just kill me now. You know, I'm the only one that's left. Nobody else loves you. It's just me. And now, you know, the whole city wants my life. And so in that chapter 18, chapter 19 of 1 Kings, we see this unfolding. And there's a couple things that God eventually said to Elijah. And if you remember, through that conversation, God provided some food. He provided some rest. And God said, I want you to see me. I want you to see me. And so if you remember, you know, he was expecting some great thing as the Lord passed by, but God was not in that. He was not in the wind. He was not in all the power. Where was God? He was in that still, small voice. Kind of the same chapters it goes through. God says, I want you to anoint some new leaders, some new kings. And so he anoints some new kings. But then the other thing he does, and this is what we're going to talk about today, is that God said, I want you to choose someone. I want you to find someone. I've got someone in mind that is going to be your successor. The one that's going to take over where you leave off. And so this is going to require this choosing, this selection, and even this training, this mentoring of our man Elisha. Elisha is going to be the one. And so Elisha, what we find out in 2 Kings, chapter 1, chapter 2, Elisha was, he was a man who seems like he was fairly wealthy. He had many ox, many plows, a lot of field. He came from a rich family, assuming here he was probably still single, lived with his parents. But it seems like he had life going for him. I mean, I guess he would have inherited the family farm. He would have had his whole life ahead of him. This is where he was comfortable. This is what he knew. He was with people. It seems like they loved him and he cared about them. It seems like life was going good. But there was something else that was happening maybe in Elisha's life that was thinking, but maybe in life there's something more than just this daily doing the same thing, even though it's good, even though I'm happy with what I'm doing, but maybe there's something more than just work in the fields. Maybe there's just something more than just my job. Maybe there's something more than just my family. Maybe there's just something more than just this day in and day out and this regular grind. Is there something more in my life? And we're assuming at this point that Elisha has heard about Elijah, because Elijah comes along and he's going to select now this young man to be his successor. And so he comes along and he says, I know you've got lots of field, you've got lots of land, you've got a good family, you've got friends, life looks good to you, but maybe there's something better. Maybe God is calling you to something higher, there's something more. And so even when we go through this today, I don't want you to think, well, you know, I'm not ready to quit my job. You know, I'm not ready to leave my life of comfort right now. You know, and maybe we're not saying that, but maybe you're feeling in your heart, there's got to be something more in life than just what I'm doing right now. There's got to be more. God has something for me. He's got a plan for me. There's got to be something bigger than just what I do at my work. And maybe you're good at your work. But you know what it's like when you have a job at work and maybe you're assigned a task, or maybe you're working with a group of people and you've got this great idea, you got a plan, and you've got schedules and you know, you work towards it, and maybe you even complete the job and the task that's been given to you, and you may feel good for a while, but you know, after a bit, it's just kind of the same thing. It's good while we're in it, and maybe it's good when we complete it, but it really leaves you empty at the end of the day. And maybe Elisha was feeling this way. So Elijah, it says there, he went from there in 1 Kings chapter 19. So we're going to go back a little bit. So we read from 2 Kings, but now we're going to go back. Well, how did Elisha and Elijah, how did they connect together? Where's the beginning point? And this is it here in chapter 19. And so this is the same chapter when Elijah is really discouraged, and God's saying, you need to get someone else that you're going to train, you're going to mentor. You're not the only one. And here's another young man, and man, he is going to stick close with you. I mean, he is going to be faithful to you. He is going to serve you. He is going to be a blessing to you, and he is going to take up where you leave off. And so here Elisha was plowing in the field. He had 12 yoke of oxen, so that's 24 oxen. And so the idea here is that he had a lot of oxen there. He wasn't doing it all himself. The idea would be that he had servants, because I couldn't imagine back then someone have, I mean, you'd have to have a pretty big plow to have 24 oxen in front of one plow. So what he has is, I mean, everybody's got a pair. So he's also working in the field, but he's got servants, or, you know, maybe friends that are working in the field as well, laborers that are working alongside of him, but he is driving the 12th pair himself. And so Elijah went up to him and says he threw his cloak around him. And as you follow through what's happening here with Elijah, you remember with Moses? Moses had something that was a symbol of the power and the authority of God, and that was what we call his staff. So that would be his stick. So it would be a shepherd's crook, perhaps. And so it was his staff. And when he held up the staff, the waters parted. And when he held up the staff, the enemy was defeated. And the staff was a symbol of God's authority. When he held up that staff, God was going to work. He was going to do something great. Now, with Elijah, he didn't have a staff. What he had was a cloak. He had, you know, we would say maybe a shawl, or, you know, an outward covering. Maybe it was just a spring jacket. He was wearing something, and that was the symbol of his authority, his power. And so he would use that in a similar way to what Moses did with his staff. But he took this coat, his cloak, his outer garment, and he just put it around the shoulders of Elisha. And that meant, it didn't even seem like he said anything. But Elisha knew what that meant. Elijah was saying, kind of like what Jesus did with his disciples, come and follow me. I will make you fishers of men. Come and follow me. There is something bigger for you. Come and follow me. God is going to begin working in your life like he has never done before. Come and follow. It's going to require faith because you're going to have to leave some things behind. Just like Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and many of the other disciples, they had to leave behind their security. They left behind their comfort. They left behind their job. They left behind their future. They left behind their 401k. They left behind even their family and their friends. They said, I'm going to follow Jesus. Now, it didn't mean they hated their family. They loved their family. With Jesus, his disciples sometimes went back and visited their family. There's nothing wrong with the family. He's just saying, if you're going to follow me, it's going to require sacrifice. You're going to have to give up some things. If you want a better life, you got to do some things differently. Now, if you want the same old life, continue doing the same thing you've always done, and you'll get more of the same. But if you want God to work in your life, there's going to have to be a sacrifice. And so here he was willing to do that. He was willing to give up. And give up, again, this place where he's got security, his power. What's he going to be doing? Well, a little bit later on, by the time we get to 2 Kings, there was a question. Well, and this is after Elijah has died. Elisha is the prophet. And people are saying, well, is there anybody in the land that knows anything about God, that he can speak for God, a prophet of God? Is there anybody in the land? And they weren't really sure. These are the leaders. They were scratching their heads and wondering. And so here the people of God were in kind of in a dilemma. We need a voice from God. We need a word from God. We need some direction from God. Who can we ask? And this was what was said about who's around. Anybody got any ideas? Well, an officer of the king of Israel, he answered to the king, well, Elisha, the son of Shaphat, this is the guy we're talking about, he's here. And this is all we really know about him. I mean, it doesn't sound too hopeful to me. But he used to pour water on the hands of Elijah. Now, if I was the king, I'd say, got anybody else? You know, pouring water on his hands. What is that saying? That's saying Elisha left everything he had literally to be his servant. Now, we talk about sometimes a personal attendant or, you know, a personal worker that kind of works with, you know, maybe a big star. You need somebody to carry your luggage. You need somebody to do a little bit of security duty. You need somebody who can take your laundry out or your dry cleaning and maybe bring in some food. Just all these things. They got to coordinate all this stuff. I mean, I don't even think Elisha was that high on the totem pole. It just says, I mean, he just pours water. In other words, he helps the guy wash his hands. Now, that's kind of a really lowly servant position. And this is what Elisha was willing to do. I'm willing to give up everything I've got. And I'm just going to follow Elijah as a personal servant. I mean, just whatever he asks, that's okay. I'm not in it for fame. I'm not in it for fortune. I'm not in it, you know, so I can make a big name for myself. Actually, I'm not even in it, so see, I can. Well, what can I get out of this? Well, how can God bless me? How's God going to use me? He says, I'm just going to serve. That's all I'm going to do. That's all he was known for, just being a servant. And yet, you know, if you're like me, you know, sometimes it's like, well, you know, I'd love to have the position. Now, what comes with, like, is that the corner office position? Like, is that the one with increased salary? Is that the one with the bonus? Is that the one where I get lots of recognition? I get gratitude at the end of the year. You know, maybe I get in the company newsletter, you know, that I've got my name up there, that people know who I am. You know, I want to be known for what I'm doing. Or am I just willing to say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to serve. Just, you know, you can ask me. I'll do it. It's not a big deal. I'm not in it for me. I'm not in it for something that I can benefit. I want to serve. Actually, I'd just like to serve God. Could you find a place for me? I just want to serve God. Doesn't matter how big or how small. Just name it. If it's just washing hands or washing feet, I could do that. If it's just cleaning or scrubbing, if it's doing toilets, I can do that. I'm willing to serve. Sometimes we have these ideals and say, well, you know, this is what I'm willing to do. And if you don't call me to that, then, you know, I'm not in. Right? I'm very specific for what I want to do. Because there's things that, you know, they're just beneath me, right? Because pretty important. Now, that's kind of humiliating to do something like that. But here's a man saying, I'm willing to serve. That's all I want. I just want to serve. And I want God to continue to work in my life. Elijah, his name means my God is Jehovah. Elisha, his name means God is salvation. And so God is going to be working in both of these men's life. But eventually, this mantle, this cloak, is going to be transferred now to Elisha. And we're going to see how this happens. But you know, with Elisha, it's kind of like this parable, short, very short parable that Jesus tells in Matthew chapter 13. In it, he's talking about all the different parables of the kingdom, what the kingdom of heaven is like. But he's saying here, the kingdom of heaven, this idea of being connected with God and saying, I'm going to be about the work and the business and the plan of God. That's what I'm concerned about. But when someone comes along the kingdom and they understand what it's all about, here it says the kingdom of heaven is like a man and he finds a great treasure in the field. I mean, he knows how much it's worth. And this is the kingdom of heaven, that this kingdom is worth so much more than anything I have, anything that I could want. I look at everything else everybody else has, and this is even greater than what they have. I mean, this is the greatest treasure. This is the greatest thing that I've ever seen or I could ever imagine. And so I'm willing to give up everything I have. You remember Elisha? Willing to give up everything he has to follow Elijah. Here are disciples saying, I'm willing to give up whatever there is, whatever is in my life. I'm willing to separate. I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to put that behind me. I'm willing to sell it. Why? Because I want to get the treasure that is beyond value. I mean, it's beyond good. It's beyond great. It's even beyond awesome. I mean, it's just an amazing treasure. I'm willing to sacrifice everything so I can have that. But I think we understand this, but you know, for us it's like, oh, gotta give that up, and oh, gotta give that up too, and I like that so much, and I don't want, okay, God, I'll give it up, right? Do you ever have those kind of attitudes with God? Okay, I do. So you know, it's like, no! I'll give up everything, but not that! And then you're like, oh, okay, right? That's kind of what this guy, because that's the word is used, right? Because it is joy. Now, does that sound joyful, what I was just describing, the way sometimes we react to God? It's like, whoa, this is amazing. This is so good. I'll give it all up. I'm happy to give it up. And God says, are you sure? It's like, yeah, take it all. I don't want it anymore. Because that's just not that valuable to me. There's something of extreme importance, the kingdom of God. This is what Elisha was doing. I'm willing to give all that up. With joy, not reluctantly, not dragging his feet, not saying, well, let me think about it. You know, maybe next year, you know, maybe there's going to be a time in my life where I'm going to be open to serving the Lord. Maybe there's going to become a convenient time in my life where I'm going to surrender my life and I'm going to commit and I'm going to become a Christian and maybe I'll even commit to the local church. But right now, I just like the independence. I just like church hopping. I just kind of like being close enough to God that if there's a problem, I can yell, maybe really loud, he could hear me. But you know, I don't want to really be following him. I hope he follows me sometimes. I just don't know if I want to follow him. But here's somebody saying, I'm willing to give it all up. And this is what he does. So by the time we get to 2 Kings chapter 2, Elisha has been a faithful follower, not only of God, but of Elijah. And he's been seeing what God has done. Also, take, you know, remember kind of what I had said, what had happened back in chapter 18 and 19, with the prophets of Baal and, you know, it's at that time where Elijah said to Elisha, you know, yeah, come follow me. And Elisha, again, maybe, I don't know, was thinking, do you know, there's a lot of people after you. Like, I don't think you're going to be living a very peaceful life. I think we're going to get to a lot of like the hotels along the way. And when they see us coming, they turn on the sign. No vacancy. We don't want you here. We don't serve people like you. We're going to get into trouble if anybody finds out you're here. We're not going to associate. You know, it's not a life of luxury. Sometimes it's a life of pain. Sometimes a life of loneliness. Sometimes it's a life of sorrow. So it's not always going to be easy. But now as they're traveling along, and so it's evident now in chapter 2 that Elijah is getting old, that God is going to call him home, and he's going to be going to heaven, okay? And so they're on their way, and so several times there's all these obstacles in Elisha's way saying, maybe you shouldn't follow. Maybe you shouldn't follow so closely. Maybe you should just leave this behind. I mean, Elijah's going to die. Elisha, it's time for you to break out on your own. It's time for you to take it up yourself. but he continues to follow. And so we're not going to read all of these verses, but basically it says, first of all, starts, they're on their way from Gilgal. And so that's where they're starting. This is where they're going out. They're going to be heading towards, the last point, towards the Jordan. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But this is where they're headed. This is how things are working. They're leaving Gilgal. Now, if you remember what Gilgal, you may not remember because you may not have known, because I didn't really know that much about Gilgal, although you hear about it sometimes in the Bible, but maybe you don't put all the pieces together. But Gilgal is the place that became really famous in the days of Joshua. And so after they had crossed over the Jordan River towards the Promised Land, they ended up in Gilgal. And there, they set up the 12 stones. And that was like a monument of how God was working in their life. God had been with them in the past as they were wandering in the desert. Now God's going to be with them as they go into the Promised Land, and they're going to have victory after victory, and God is going to bless them. And so they're setting up these stones as a memorial, saying God is with us. And so it became a place where the prophets would meet, and they would gather there and say, like, this is a place where God is. And so he set up those 12 stones. There the people renewed their commitment, even by the sign of circumcision, that it was there that they remembered and partook of the Passover again in Joshua chapter 5. And in Joshua chapter 5 in verse 9, it says, it was here that God took away the reproach of Egypt from the people. So there's just a lot of amazing things that happen at Gilgal. And so Gilgal would be a really good place if you're a man of God just to say, I'm going to stay at Gilgal because God works here. God has blessed this place. And there's so many good memories of how God has been working in the past. And sometimes we may want to just say, I just like remembering and reminiscing of the past. And whenever I think about God, I think about what he has done. I always maybe open up the Bible and read how God has worked through many great people. And sometimes even us older people, sometimes we think, well, I remember God working in the 1950s and the 60s and the 70s. And sometimes we call it the glory days. And that's just because we have really bad memories. You know, and if you're like me, because sometimes, what do we think about the past? Oh, it was all so good back then. It's like, really? You know, I read history. It wasn't that good in the 50s and 60s. Right? I read church history. It wasn't that good in the 50s and 60s. I mean, we had our issues and our problems and our struggles and all that stuff. I mean, it wasn't that good. It was okay, but it wasn't good. Oh, we can live in the past. But sometimes we are so caught up and we're so positioned and we're so locked in the past that we're not even sure if God's going to work today. You know, God used to work. We're just not sure how he's going to work or if he's going to work in our lives. And so, yes, it's easy to stay in the past. It's easy to remember all the good things of the past. But Elisha says, no, I'm going to continue with my man Elijah. I'm not going to dwell here in Gilgal. So they went down to Bethel. And that was the next place. Bethel, now, so like there's two words that are similar. Bethel and Bethlehem. So the El in it is God. El. Beth means house. So Bethel means house of God. Bethlehem means house. It's the Beth house. By the way, I don't think Beth's here today, but don't call her a house. It just doesn't work very well. But that's what it means. Beth is house. So Bethlehem is house of bread. Okay. So Bethel is house of God. Well, why wouldn't you just want to stay in the house of God? I mean, don't good things happen in the house of God? Why was it called the house of God? Well, it was there that Abraham worshipped in Genesis chapter 12. That was one of the places that he set up a place where he could build a monument, build a sacrifice, and he worshipped to God. It was also there that Jacob, that's where he was praying, and he had that vision, and we call it Jacob's ladder, and he sees the power of God, and he literally said that this is not only the house of God, but this is the entrance into the way of heaven. That's what he thought about Bethel. That's why he called it Bethel. It's where God is. Well, I mean, wouldn't you want to stay where God, why wouldn't Elisha say, hey, you know, Elijah, you continue on. You go on your journey. You're about to depart. I'm going to stay here where it's the house of God. It's the gateway. It's the doorway to heaven. I'm going to stay here. And there's more prophets here. And the prophets are saying, well, don't you know that today your master's going to be taken from you? And maybe they're really trying to discourage him. He's leaving today. I mean, he's on his way out. This is going to be old news. I mean, you're the new man, aren't you? Why do you keep following him? You say, no, I'm going to keep following. He's like, don't be talking like that. I don't want to hear it. I'm going to be following Elijah. Well, then they got to Jericho. And you remember Jericho was the first city that the Israelites went to. It was a fortified city, and God did a great miracle there. That's when they marched around the city and the walls came down, and it was just a great victory of a great city. Remembering how God continues to work. It was actually the symbol of death. Sorry, that's the Jordan is the symbol of death. But Jericho is a strong fortified city and represent fragrance. It was fragrant. But he said, I'm not staying here. I'm going to continue on. So we get to the Jordan. This is jumped ahead. But the Jordan was descending, and the Jordan was a symbol of death. You know, and so quite often when people say, I'm going to the Jordan, and we get some of our songs that way. And so it's kind of interesting because this is the way the Jordan works, okay? When we sing the songs of, you know, Jordan, I'm crossing Jordan, I'm going to the other side of the Jordan, all those kinds of songs, sometimes we get our analogies mixed up, okay? It's not to do with when the Israelites were coming through the wilderness and going into the promised land. Because our promise, you know, that promised land they went into, they had a lot of struggles and problems and issues and everything else there. That promised land was still full of sin and sinful people. That's not going to be our heaven. The heaven is actually working the other way. Here, Elijah is traveling from what we would say the promised land here near Bethel or near Jericho, and he's traveling the other way as he passes through the Jordan, signifying it's going to be his death. And so a lot of times when people say, I'm going to the Jordan, it means today I'm going to die. I'm going to the grave. Today I'm going to go meet the Lord, and this is the Jordan. And so Elijah was saying to Elisha, you don't need to go. Just stay here. You don't need to follow. And he says, no, I'm going to continue following. I am not going to give up. I'm not going to turn back. So just, if we could have a picture in our mind of the Jordan, just so you don't get too grandiose, because sometimes we think, oh yes, I remember the Israelites left Egypt and they crossed through the Nile. And man, that was a great picture with Charlton Heston. All right. Wasn't that good? Right? It was that big, wide, it was, you know, really deep and all that stuff. So don't get your hopes up. So deflate a little bit, because this is actually a picture, we'll get there to a picture of the Jordan, because this is what they're going to be doing. They're going to be crossing over to the Jordan. Elijah said, stay here. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan. Elijah replied, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. So the two of them walked in, and so this is the Jordan. So again, it's not a great span of water. As a matter of fact, in the springtime, it fills up. It can be running fairly fast. But in other times of the year, it is very shallow. So you may not need to part it in order to cross it. In other words, it may be up to your knees. Okay? So it's not that deep. It's not that. So it's not a grandiose miracle. But I challenge you, if you find even a river like this, even if it has less water, still try it sometimes. Just say, well, it's small. So like part water, dry ground. I'm walking through. Right? See, it's still a miracle, even though it may not be as grandiose in our mind as Charlton Heston. But, I mean, try it. We have a baptistry. Like, part the waters in the baptistry, walk through on the dry liner, and see how that works. Right? See, it's still a miracle of God. The people recognize it as a miracle of God. So Elijah comes, and he parts the water. He takes off this mantle, this cloak he has, puts it down, the waters part, and they literally walk through on dry land. And now he's going to his destination. He is going to his heavenly reward. And this is a great picture that we have. But before he leaves, this is the last question. After they've even crossed the Jordan, this is the last question of Elijah to Elisha. Tell me what I can do for you before I am taken from you. What is that you want? You get anything you want. And so even in our minds, we may think that's such a similar question that years earlier that God asked of King Solomon. What is it that you want? If you're going to be the king of Israel, and out of all the things that you could choose, even Solomon said, well, give me a heart of wisdom that I may lead these people. I just want to be a good, a fair, a righteous, an honest king. I want to be able to lead these people in a godly way. That's what I want. And this is similar to what Elisha said. He could have said, boy, you know, I want peace in the land. I want everyone to like me, right? I want to be famous. I'd like a little bit more money than what I used to have. Like, he could have asked all kinds of things, but what does he ask? He says, I want a double portion of your spirit. A double portion. Now, we don't know exactly what that means, because a double portion, if you remember in the Old Testament, if there was a father, and by the way, Elisha does call Elijah his father, but you remember in the Old Testament, when a man was about to die, he would give what? A double portion to his oldest. So the idea here is, this is his only child, I want the double portion. Because back then, the double portion was just not to do with finances and material things, it also had to do with position, authority, power. You'd now become the patriarch of the family. And he's saying, I want to be in that position where I can do what you've done. But perhaps he did want to do more. And if you've ever counted up, it's very interesting, if you've ever counted up Elijah's miracles, which would include prophecy, condemnation, judgment, and the miracles that he did, even like raising people from the dead, quite a miracle. He has 14 of those. Now, Elisha, all right, I'm going to give you one guess. If he had double, now, you may need a calculator, but actually, Elisha did have 28, which is exactly double, which is crazy when you think about it, listed in the Bible, 28 miracles, prophecies, and things like that. Like, so let me give you one example. You remember Elijah, there was a woman who, her son died, and he brought the son back to life. But you know, Elisha, there was another son, an only son that had died, and Elisha brought him back to life. But that ain't nothing. Because Elisha died, they buried him in a cave. Years later, another guy died, and they thought, what am I going to do with his body? I don't know, throw him in the cave. They didn't know what cave it was. But his dead body landed on Elisha's bones, and this dead guy decides to get up and live. I mean, the guy does miracles when he's dead. There's not too many other prophets that can do that. So he did actually raise two people from the dead. One when he was living, the other when he was dead. Quite a man of God. The power of God was working through him. So what does he want? He wants a double portion of the Spirit. I want to do more. I want God to work through me. Not so that he can have fame and fortune, but so that he can be a blessing and so that he can continue on in this work that God has. And what a great work it was and how God continued to bless him. So Elijah said, you can have that if you see me when I leave. Now initially Elijah said, that's a great thing. That's a big thing. I don't know if I can do that. And Elijah really couldn't. That wasn't up to him to give God's spirit. But he knew as God spoke through him, this is God's to give. And God says, if you are with Elijah, if you literally see him when he leaves, and that's when we have the picture of the chariots of fire coming down and receiving Elijah. And he's one of the men in the Bible, along with Enoch, who never tasted death. They were transferred or transformed into heaven without dying here upon the earth. Don't know how all that happens or what they look like in heaven, but that's the way it happened. He was taken up within a fiery chariot. And as he was going, it's just almost miraculous if you could see this happening. Elijah takes off his outer garment, this mantle as it's called, and he throws it. You can imagine just seeing it falling down from heaven. And now Elisha goes over and picks that up, and that's going to be his mantle. So he took hold of this garment, his own garment. This is Elisha. So what does he do? He says, I'm going to rip off everything I have. I'm going to rip off my outer garment. Because my outer garment doesn't mean anything. This outer garment, this is just me. And I don't want to be me anymore. I don't want to be operating in my own flesh anymore, in my own strength anymore. I need to take this old off. And I need to take upon myself this cloth, this mantle, this robe of Elijah, and I'm going to put it on. It's going to be the new me. This is going to be a transformation. This is going to be God working. And so this is what he did. He picked up Elijah's cloak that had fallen from him, We went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. And you know what he did? He rolled that cloak up just like he saw Elijah do, and he hit the water. The water separated, and he walked through on dry land. And all the people around knew what had happened, that there had been a transformation, a change in his life, a change in his life. And as I was thinking about this lesson this week, I thought, you know, what it would be like living back then. Could you imagine if Elijah was there? I mean, how many of us would say, I want to follow him? I want to serve him. I want to leave everything behind to follow him because he is a man of God. He speaks for God. God works in his life. He calls people back to the word of God. He is a man that God is using. Could you imagine living back? I mean, would you follow him? Would you be like an Elisha? Or would you be like some of these other prophets? Like, well, he's kind of interesting, but we can stand off from a distance. I mean, we're still kind of prophets, but we're really not that connected. We don't really have that much power. But, you know, it's quite a show. It's quite entertaining. As a matter of fact, I enjoy reading the Bible. There's a lot of nice stories, and there's a lot of good things. There's got lessons, and there's moral things, and the Bible's very good. I don't know if I want to be that close to Jesus, though. I mean, I don't know if I want to be that connected. You see, Elijah, I mean, he was a great man of God. But you know, and I know, he was nothing like Jesus. So if only we could say, I want to take off me. What if I put on Christ? Well, Sunday nights we're studying Galatians. We're probably not going to get there tonight, but this is what it says in Galatians. We are all sons and we're daughters of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all of us that were baptized into Christ have clothed ourselves with Christ. So what God is calling us to is you need to take off the old. Take off that old person. That person you used to live for, the person that meant so much to you, the person that was in control all the time. The person that demanded their own way and their rights. You know, the person that had, I've got a lot of stuff in my past. The way I grew up. Still have some family issues. Still have some attitudes. I still have some pride in my life. I still have things that I say, no, I'm not going to do that. I still have some things, but Jesus says, listen, you take that off. Take off that old person, that person of the world, that person that you used to be. You don't want to live like that anymore. You don't need to live like that anymore. And if you're going to do anything for the kingdom of God, you can't have that on anymore. Now, there are some that say, I'd like a little of both, so I try to put Jesus on top of my old life. That doesn't work. You take off the old to put on the new. This is what Elisha had to do. Tear off the old. He wasn't going back. By the way, when Elisha left, what did he do with his cows and with his oxen and with his plow? Burn them. He's not going back. He's not going home. He's not going to the old way of life. And now he tears his outer cloak off. He's not wearing that anymore. Never. It can never be worn again. It's ruined. Because he's found something better. An invitation then for us. The application for us. Because a lot of us are Christians here. And I'm glad you're here. Many have been coming for a long time. That's wonderful. But have we really taken off the old to put on the new? Oh, we've been baptized, but have we really clothed ourselves with Christ? Is God really working in us? Have we really surrendered? We're going to sing a song. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. no turning back. We're moving forward. If today you've never surrendered your life to Jesus, if you've never become a Christian, as the scripture has said, through baptism we've clothed ourselves with a brand new person. Not me, not my friends, not my family, not my church. I've clothed myself with Jesus. If today you want to do that, to say the old is gone, the new is happening. The new can be today. Let's stand, let's sing. Let us know how we can help you in your Christian walk.